My name is Ranjay Gulati, and I'm a professor of business administration at the Harvard Business School. I research and teach strategies to build winning, high-impact organizations and help people within them behave more boldly, find more meaning in their work, and reach their full potential. Over the last several decades, I have seen my students at every level, from young MBAs to top Fortune 500 executives, reflect on the importance of courage, both as an individual trait that enables us to grow as leaders, as well as a collective phenomenon that helps teams and organizations thrive. Yet in subsequent research and advising, I found that courage remained elusive for both firms and individuals, the exception more than the norm. I found this to be true in my own life as well, and I knew I had to write this book. I have spent the past decade researching individual and organizational courage and have gathered and analyzed over 200 stories of physical and moral courage, from astronauts like Teddy Wirtz to Naohiro Masuda, the plant manager at Fukushima Daiichi plant, to social activists like Malala Yousafzai to Olympic gymnast Simone Biles. Along with my own research into the phenomenon, I also drew upon fragmented research on the topic across a wide range of disciplines, from psychology and sociology to economics, history, and neuroscience. How to Be Bold provides readers with a roadmap to understand what courage really is, why it's important in our personal and professional lives, and finally, provide a set of practical tools on allowing us all to become more courageous. I'd like to share 5 insights with you. My hope is that once you've learned these, you'll be ready to embrace the opportunities and challenges that lie ahead with resolve and boldness. Here we go. Lesson number 1. Farewell to cowardice. Courage is a choice, not an innate trait. Why are some of us able to act boldly and decisively in challenging situations while others freeze or hunker down? Let me share an early example of courage I witnessed firsthand. One day back when I was a teenager, my mother and I received a visitor at home. The man introduced himself as a representative of a real estate development company intent on buying some land my mother had purchased years before to build a farmhouse, a retreat for herself. As a designer, she felt the need to have a place to get away from it all. The company had approached her repeatedly in the past, and each time she had refused to sell. This time, the man at first pleaded with her, offering her a blank check. When she refused, he became adamant that his boss had insisted he must close this deal today. And when that didn't work, he pulled back his blazer and revealed a gun tucked in his waist belt. I froze in place, pondering what to do next. My mother, who was sitting across the table at the sofa across, without hesitation, immediately stood up, walked up to the man, and slapped him hard across the face. He was stunned, and so was I. She then ordered him out of the house, and the developer was never to be seen or heard from again. After he left, I immediately asked her if she had seen the gun, and wasn't she scared? To my surprise, she replied that yes, she had seen the gun, and yes, she was afraid. But she said, "I will not let fear define me. No one comes to my house and bullies me into selling my land that I have worked hard to buy." At first, I was puzzled by her response. It took me a long time to conclude that this behavior of hers is exactly what courage is. It is taking action in the face of fear rather than the absence of fear. Through this experience and others, I also came to realize that courage is a choice. My mother had made a choice to face her fear and not allow it to immobilize her or to cave into it. For a long time, I assumed she and others like her were innately courageous, while I was not. I saw these few individuals as one of the chosen ones, made of steel, like the ancient samurai or modern-day test flight pilots. When it came to myself, I took solace in the fact that most of us humans are not wired for courage, but rather for cowardice and self-preservation. Evolutionarily, fortune favored those who hunker down rather than those who expose themselves to danger. This instinct to self-preserve is deeply rooted in our DNA. But I soon realized that opting for cowardice in our lives again and again while safe is not a wise choice. It locks us into complacency and keeps us from leading a full life. Courage doesn't come naturally to us, but it is necessary for thriving in life. Courage allows us to move from a place of complacency to a place of empowerment. It is what has allowed the humankind to progress over time. It was these courageous few who were able to move things forward. The first step towards courage is to become acquainted with the discomfort we feel when we experience fear. Our bodies and minds are yelling run or hide. But what if instead we made the conscious choice to lean into the fear, stay with it for a moment, understand it, and move forward through it? Lesson number two, commitment. Courage starts with the story we tell ourselves. Imagine this scenario: after dedicating your life to opposing a brutal authoritarian government in your country and advocating for a just and open society, you narrowly survive an assassination attempt. You are now finally safe in Germany with your family. Would you return, knowing it means certain arrest, imprisonment, or even death? This was the choice Alexei Navalny faced. In January 2021, Navalny boarded a flight back to Russia, leaving his children behind. He was detained upon arrival and died in a remote Siberian prison 3 years later. What compelled him to walk back into the fire? Navalny's unimaginable courage was the product of a powerful story he had crafted for himself and others. His vision was to create the beautiful Russia of the future, a prosperous democratic nation allied with the West and immersed in world commerce. This potent, tension-filled story didn't just inspire him. It articulated a moral quest to follow and a series of principles to uphold. It boosted conviction and commitment, the willingness to act according to those principles. When we embrace a powerful story and make it our own, we feel a sense of personal responsibility and feel compelled to act, even in the face of fear and possible harm that may come to us. And for Navalny himself, facing the ultimate consequences, it reframed the stakes, elevating the dream of a prosperous nation above the fear of isolation, risk, or even death. You don't have to be a political activist or a combat warrior or an astronaut to embrace such a path. Stories are courage magnifiers. Courageous behavior starts with moral clarity that becomes a catalyst for bravery. As you train your courage muscles, ask yourselves, what do I stand for? What values do I consider core to myself, unshakable? And then ponder, what would I do to defend them? Lesson number three, comprehension. Courage relies on imperfect theories, not on perfect intel. Many situations that require courage are rife with uncertainty. While risk is something we can usually comprehend and even try to mitigate, uncertainty means tackling the unknown. It feels like we're walking through the fog, unable to foretell consequences or outcomes. We simply don't have enough information to make sound predictions. No amount of analysis can help us credibly pin down a strategy. There is no optimizing our way around it. When we face uncertainty, it triggers a sense of loss of control. Think early days of COVID or the great financial crisis. Most of us would remain paralyzed and wait for the fog to dissipate. But there is another way. A brilliant social scientist, Carl Weick, devoted much of his life's work to this question and thankfully left us some valuable insights. He defined the process of moving through uncertainty as sense-making. Sense-making consists of progressively understanding an unclear situation by taking small strategic steps rather than by standing still and analyzing things in a vacuum. I'm reminded of how Tom Cruise approaches the incredible stunts he does in his movies. How can this man jump off a cliff while racing a motorcycle with such confidence? Turns out he and his team spent countless hours taking small steps to progressively know more about every aspect of the stunt first. The setting, the gear, the training. He and his team likely simulate small versions and iterate and learn from each of those efforts and progressively try more elaborate moves, learning again from each of them before they take the ultimate leap. He said in an interview, I'm going to learn to crawl before I walk, walk before I jog, jog before I run, run before I sprint, and then I sprint off a cliff or a building. This is exactly what we do in sense making. We take small steps and gather data, then take stock to analyze what they mean. With this knowledge, we formulate an evolving theory. What is going on? What is this a case of? Have we seen this pattern of events in the past? We then take more steps, gather more data, contrast it with what we know from before, and we revise the theory over and over again. This is not only something that firefighters or disaster relief respondents do in their daily confrontation with uncertainty, but also something all of us can embrace in finding greater boldness in our lives. We move through uncertainty to understand it. We don't stand still. We drive away the fog through our very own actions. We act our way into knowing. Lesson number 4, connection. Courage takes a village. When we encounter uncertain situations, we often turn inward and tackle them alone. We hesitate to seek help, fearing it might seem like a burden or a sign of weakness. This reluctance is fueled by the cultural ideal of the self-made hero, someone who triumphs through their own determination and skill. As a result, we mistakenly view self-sufficiency as strength and needing others as failure. But this belief may actually undermine our courage. As I found in my research, courageous individuals don't shy away from seeking support. They recognize that strong relationships are key to bravery. Having people they can count on in tough moments not only boosts their confidence, but also reshapes how they see themselves, empowering them to face serious challenges. Take Frances Haugen, a former MBA student of mine who became a whistleblower at Facebook. She tried to fix the issues she saw at Facebook from the inside first. But when that didn't work, she went public, knowing full well it would cost her dearly. She lost her job and valued connections, but she gained peace of mind knowing she helped spearhead a movement to get social media companies to feel accountable for the kinds of content they publish and promote. Research highlights 4 distinct kinds of support your connections can provide, which in turn can boost your boldness. A. Moral support, or I've got your back. B. Informational support, or here's what you need to know. C. Resource support, or I can lend you some tools that could help you. And D. Appraisal support, or you're doing well, keep going, or here's what you need to change. Building and nurturing connections like these isn't a nice to have. It's fundamental to developing the capacity for bold action. Don't wait for a crisis to forge your connections. Start now. Cultivate relationships with people who can offer this multifaceted support. And remember, it's a two-way street. Just as you rely on others to build your courage muscles, offer your support to them to build theirs. The myth of the lone hero is compelling, but the reality of supported courage is far more powerful. Lesson number 5, culture. We can design organizations and teams to boost courage. We can be courageous as individuals, but we can make the biggest difference when we infuse the teams and organizations we work in with courage. This is easier said than done. Most teams and organizations are inherently risk-averse. They rely on systems of predictability and accountability that help processes run smoothly. The flip side is that these very systems also hold people back from acting boldly or even speaking up. And yet, some teams and organizations have avoided this trap and created environments where collective courage flourishes. We all know that organizational culture can play a huge role in their success, but can courage become an important pillar of a winning organization? The workers of the Taj Mahal Palace Hotel provide a striking example of collective courage. In 2008, as terrorist attacks rocked iconic landmarks of the city of Mumbai, the Taj's staff and guests were trapped under siege for nearly 60 hours. At this trying time, the staff's ethos of guest first overrode the primal instinct of self-preservation. Not one of them fled the scene. Instead, they all stayed and made sure the guests who were stuck in the hotel were protected. Instead, they all stayed and made sure the guests who were stuck in the hotel were protected. In one of the banquet halls, staff were serving dinner to about 60 guests that night. 23-year-old Malika Jagat was the young manager in charge. She heard what initially sounded like fireworks, only to realize they were gunshots. Without panic, she immediately took charge, instructing everyone to get down on the floor and remain silent. She and her team shut all the doors and windows, turning off the lights and locked the room to remain undetected by the terrorists who were walking the halls looking for people to shoot. The guests and the staff lay awake overnight, watching and hoping that this would pass. At one point, smoke from a fire outside seeped into the room, triggering the sprinklers and causing further panic. At this point, Malika and her team quieted their emerging commotion and quickly took action to break one of the windows and called out to the firemen below for help. They watched as all the guests were evacuated safely down the ladder, and only then did they accept to be evacuated themselves. And the hotel's director, Karambir Kang, who was below directing the firefighters, kept directing rescue operations throughout the siege, even though his wife and children were trapped in their apartment inside the hotel and ultimately tragically perished. A guest later said, "He never once mentioned his own family. He was only asking about us, telling us to stay calm." This remarkable story illustrates how collective courage is activated when organizational values are truly lived rather than simply declared. Make a point to join teams and organizations that allow that collective spirit to rise. Do your part to model courage for others and inspire them. And if you are in a position to make the rules, don't let complacency stifle bold action. I'll leave you with one final insight. In his foreword to my book, How to Be Bold, His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, "Courage is ultimately an inner journey." Yes, behaving with courage can allow us to impact and shape our world in profound ways, but ultimately, courage is a choice we make from within. It is something we choose to embrace as a central pillar in our lives. We aren't born courageous, we choose to be so. I hope you let these insights take root within you and create the conviction that you too can become courageous. Courage is essential in the very uncertain world we live in. It allows us to expand our horizons, to grow in unexpected ways, and to reach our fullest potential. I'd like to thank you for listening, and I look forward to hearing how the concepts I've shared with you today help you take bold action in your life.